the Torah commands us that a person when he's 8 years old, a person when he has a child that's 8 days old, he should circumcise him. So first thing we have to understand is what is 8 days old, and then what is the circumcision. So we measure 8 days. We say if a person is born on Sunday before sunset, right, we know the Jewish day ends somewhere between sunset and the next 72 minutes. So if a child is born anytime on Sunday before sunset, we say he was for sure born on Sunday. And Sunday is day number one. We count day number Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. The next Sunday is day number eight. At some point on the following Sunday, he should have a circumcision. Let's say a person is born on Motzei Shabbat, Saturday night, the night between Saturday and Sunday. So we know in Judaism, we count the days starting with the night, right? Shabbos begins the night between Friday and Shabbos. Sunday begins the night between Shabbos and Sunday. So if this child was born, and at times midnight on Motzei Shabbos, Saturday night, so that child was born halachically on Sunday. Day number one is Sunday, the eve of Sunday. We consider from night of Sunday is Sunday. So day number one again is going to be Sunday, and his circumcision has to be some point the following Sunday. Circumcision is only performed by day. Circumcision is only performed by a Jew. If a person was circumcised before his 8 days, then we have a problem. The circumcision was not kosher. If a person was circumcised by night, we have a problem. Circumcision is not kosher. If a person was circumcised by a non-Jew, we have a problem. So, and at the end, we're going to discuss what do we do when we have this problem. In general, the way it has to be done is we count 8 days, and then we perform the circumcision. Now, in ancient times, every Jew would circumcise. In Yemen, everyone would circumcise. It's not such a big deal. What is a circumcision? Now, kids, don't try this at home. I don't recommend that you try. Even in the Gemara's time, they had mohadim. They had people who that was their profession, that they were circumcisers. Today, for sure, you have people who know it. Can you learn it? Yes, you could learn it. Is it difficult to learn? Depends on who your teacher is. You could learn it in a month or two, or you could learn it in 2 years, or you could learn it in 10 years. It really depends on who your teacher is. More than how skilled you are, it depends on how skilled your teacher is. And how many circumcisions will let you perform. I mean, there are teachers who will let you perform 15 circumcisions a day, and within a week you can know what you're doing. There are teachers who let you do one a year, and then you could spend 10 years with them. So a lot of it, mostly depends on the teacher.
Period of the week?
What?
What about the parent, period of the week that you're trying?
It's a story by Rabbi Yitzchak Zilber. You probably know. It's very big tzaddik from Kazan. It's Tatarstan. It's near Russia. So one person in a Russian prison, he was Jew, and he was there because of something not normal consequences. So he made Shuvah in prison, and he decided to make an exhumation. And he thought he took something like a knife. It's not knife, it's for his I don't know how is it in English.
Razor.
Razor?
Yeah.
So he made by this.
I know this person.
Yes?
I know, I learned Chavuta with his son. It was a person who really, he didn't know anything. He fought for Judaism, but he didn't know much. He learned about Judaism and was put in jail. And in Russia, in the jail, he circumcised himself, right?
He
lives here. He lives in Jerusalem. I don't know his age. I mean, I would say he's in his 50s.
And what's his name?
I don't know if he wants me to say. I learned Chavuto the son. I mean, it's a known story in Merkaz Arab. His son learned in Merkaz Arab. So the circumcision, right, that's like Avraham Avinu, what this man did.
Yeah.
Right, when he walks into the room, I stand up. I say, there walks a tzaddik. Right. But still. Okay. And that. So, how do we perform circumcision? Basically, when a baby is born, if we look, let's say my finger is the aver. So, when a baby is born, the way he's born is there's the aver, and we'll call it the cherry on top, which is called the atara in Hebrew, and then there's skin that comes from the stomach and goes all the way up to the top and has a hole in it, and that skin covers the whole aver. Now, that skin, from the point of the atara, from the cherry upward, is classified as arla. We call that the skin that needs to be circumcised. But really, it's skin, we call it foreskin, right? Really, it's a layer of skin that goes all the way down to the stomach. That goes all the way to where it's attached. We say that the Torah commands us to cut off the arla, and the arla is defined the part of that skin that goes from the atara upward. Now, how do you measure that? You look at a baby, you stand up the aver, and then you grab that piece of skin, pull it up, cut it off. What you have in your fingers is that piece of skin, right? So if, let's say, this is the aver, we stand it up, we grab over here this skin, pull it up, and now nowadays you guys see I have long nails. In a minute I'll explain to you why my thumbnails have to be long. You grab the skin, pull it up, and then this amount of skin which is in your hands, because you've grabbed along where you need to cut, you cut off. Okay, that's basically a brit milah. Today we have a magen, we have this metal thing that it's like a clamp that holds down the aver so that you don't end up cutting this. You don't want to cut the cherry, right? You want to leave the intact. So you pull it up and you put this thing, this like clamp, in between, and you cut along that. That gives you also a clean cut. That gives you a nice straight cut instead of cutting jagged. Once upon a time they didn't have that. This is just since the Chasam Sofer that they have this, the magen. Once upon a time they used to lift up and then they'd feel where it ends. They'd have the skin being pulled taut. Then they'd slice up here and they'd have this jagged slice. And that's the way everyone looked, so no one cared. Today, where you could have a clean straight cut, it doesn't really make a difference. You can't tell the difference after it heals. You could if you're looking for it. Doesn't make a big difference. Now, let's think for a second what happened. We cut the skin around the cherry, around the atara. From now on, we'll call it the atara. So where is the child wounded? People always think the red top is where he's wounded. That's not wounded. That was just revealed. The wound is down here. Now, this skin, this layer of skin which we cut, really, it slides down now. The only reason it was up is because it takes the shape of the aver as a whole. But once you've cut it, so now it slides down, it slips down. So what happens is you have bleeding along the cut, and you have a little bit of bleeding from the layer that's been revealed because the skin slides down. The primary bleeding, though, is from the skin that was cut. You cut veins as you cut, right? Little veins, capillaries, and that's where the child is bleeding. So after the bleed, we bandage it, and the pressure of the bandage is supposed to stop the bleeding. We could use all kinds of medication, but you don't have to. Today, the instruction of Misada Buyut is not to use any medication, just to wrap it up. We use an antiseptic to keep it clean later. The bleeding stopped? Fine. There's one more aspect to the brit milah, and that's called priya.
Sometimes you need a bleeding, possibly.
You could, but maybe we'll discuss that later if we have time. The way God made it is that...
Cutting around, and I was like freaking out. It's like so much blood. Why did some models use scissors and only scissors? And it was like pretty weird.
So if he used scissors, it was probably because of one of two reasons. Halachically, you could perform bris milah with scissors. You don't have to perform it with any specific utensil. It's just got to be sterilized. There are britot, sometimes the way the child is built, that can't be performed anyway but with scissors. There was a brit where the mohel told the father, look, I'll do this brit for you, but I'm telling you, I'm going to have to cut the kid three times in order to finish the brit. The way he's built, there's no other way to do the brit milah safely. So it could be the way this child was built, that was a way that it was the safest way to use scissors. That's probably why the mohel did it this way. I'll give you an example. You can't be scared of blood.
No, I'm just saying there's so much blood. I couldn't believe it. It's pretty everywhere. Are you there?
But I feel bad I didn't see it. I would like to see what the build was, why the mohel chose to do it that way. There can be a few reasons, but we'll just enumerate one why your mohel would want to do that. Even though it looks like we're all built the same, we're not. And sometimes you have a child where on the bottom the Aver is really attached to the body. And there, that attachment is very important. Usually that attachment reaches to here or to here. Sometimes it can reach all the way till up here. And if you cut it, you can open up the sac, the sac of the gonads. Sometimes you come to a baby and you see that his sac is attached all the way to the tip. That's the way he's built. Now, if you do standard Brit Milah on that baby, you're going to have an open sac at the end of the Brit Milah. The only way to perform Brit Milah on that baby, there are two ways, but the safest way might be to cut around that way. That might be why the mole did it that way. I'm just giving an example. There are other instances to avoid cutting open the sac. I'm just giving an example of something that can be why a mole would have to use scissors if he's responsible. Even though he looks strange, you should know the second a mole does that, he's ruining his reputation. He's taking a risk because people are walking away and saying, I'm not taking that mole. He's a weirdo. He used scissors on that baby. That's how you walked away, right? So you should know that a mole who does it is risking his reputation, and if he agrees to do publicly, that's pretty impressive. Some mohalim will tell a parent, this is a special bris, I could do it for you, but only in a closed room. Because, look, what did you walk away saying? He did a weird thing with scissors, and boy, was that kid bleeding. You don't know that maybe he did the most responsible thing possible for that baby. Maybe. I don't know what the case was, but that's one example of where a mohal might choose to use scissors. There are other reasons why, that depend on the build of the baby.
You never had to use yet?
I had to use once for a different type of build. That had to be done with scissors. Yeah. There are other complications with the build where you would have to use scissors, where you can't. There's no other safe way of doing it. Now what's one other aspect of the bris milah as far as the bris goes? The way God created it is that the foreskin has an underskin. The foreskin bends down, meaning there's the foreskin on top, that's this external layer. And then on bottom, inside, the foreskin doubles over as another form of skin that attaches down here. And that's a thin film that really is like glued onto the aver, to the cherry on top. That's a thin film, and it folds over from here. It comes down and folds up into the hole of the aver. So when a mohel, after he's cut off the skin, he has this thin layer that's covering the aver. And that thin skin, that thin film, is called in halacha the or ha-priya, the skin that has to be uncovered. Avram wasn't given this. We were given this in tradition from Yeshua onward, that after we cut off the foreskin, we peel back this skin that's called orapriya. And that's why a mohel needs nails. That's why you'll see mohalim grow their thumbnails, because you need to be able to peel back the skin. You have to, usually we tear it in two, so it shouldn't come back up. And we peel it back. This skin, I noticed something I didn't see anyone bring down, but I noticed something amazing about this skin. When you perform a bris milah on adults, so we do it differently than children. Adults have larger veins, they bleed more, and their healing is not as good as children. And we want things more aligned. With a child, things are still small, so things heal well. With an adult, we have to help the healing more. So after we cut off the foreskin, we have to sew up the skin. What are you going to sew it to? So what we do is, we take this skin, the orapriya, we peel it back, and then we sew the remaining skin, what's not halachically foreskin, but is really the same skin, just lower down on the aver, we sew it back up to the orapriya. You guys with me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. Now, tell me, if you take any piece of skin on your body and fold it backward, what color is it going to be?
White.
It's going to be very strange. It's going to look very different from regular skin color. If a person cuts open his skin and peels it backward, so that the bottom layer looks very different than the top layer, and it doesn't look like normal skin. The ora priya, when it's right side up on an adult, it looks funny. And when you fold it backward, the bottom side of the ora priya looks like the regular skin. It just looks like God planned it, that it would be folded backwards. Like when you fold it, the bottom side of the ora priya looks like skin. The underside looks more like skin than the overside. That I noticed when I was by Britot of adults. Well, wait a second. That's how it looks. Now, on kids, you wouldn't see this. You wouldn't notice it. It's tiny. You can't see anything. Once you fold it back, it just scrumples up. You can barely see where it's at on a child. And when he grows up, so it's all healed. Okay, and there's one more aspect of the Brit Milah which is relevant, and that's the healing. So in ancient times, part of what they did to heal, to make sure the blood was flowing well, is metzitza. They'd suck out the blood, and they'd put their mouth on it and suck out to make sure that all the blood is flowing correctly. Nowadays, so we know that there's large controversy over whether a person should do metzitza with his mouth or not. And each person will ask his local Orthodox rabbi or his moel. What you can do is you could ask the moel, I want to do the metzitza on my own child. But if you're going to do that, don't be a wise aleck. Just because you think you're healthy doesn't mean you're any healthier than the moel. Many people are walking around carrying herpes and they don't know about it. Many people are walking around carrying hepatitis B and they don't know about it. So people sometimes feel like, well, my kid has everything I have. Not necessarily. As mohalim, we're supposed to get immunization against hepatitis B and other things. I'm not sure who you're better off doing it. If you're going to have it done with the mouth, so don't assume that you're doing it with the mouth is any better than the mole is doing it with the mouth. People just think it's better. It may be, may not be. Again, consult either with your mole or your local Orthodox rabbi. Any questions?
There's another option to that, right?
There are those that say that you should do it with a tube. And you could do it with a tube. No one's saying it's halachically disqualified. The question is, what's the ideal way of doing it? But everyone agrees that this doesn't disqualify a bris. Once you've performed, if you didn't do any mitzitza, you didn't do mitzitza. You didn't suck out the blood. You just bandaged the kid and put him away. It's a kosher bris. If all other aspects were kosher, that's a... So today, I don't know the medical reason that it helps the healing. 100 years ago, the Tiferes Yisrael already wrote that he doesn't know why it helps the healing. But we hold on to this tradition so strongly that we do it even though on Shabbos it's a biblical prohibition to do this, unless it's necessary for the baby. And for some reason, we're holding on to this tradition. We're saying we don't know why, but there's something that's good for the baby about this medically. And we continue doing it, even though on Shabbos, if it wouldn't be necessary, it would be biblically prohibited. And yet all generations to this day have been doing it. Even though for the last 100 years, no one can point the finger and say that this is why it's good. We don't know why it's good medically. To do it specifically with the mouth or to do it in general. But we do it. We hold on to it and we assume there's something we're missing medically. Now, if people are uncomfortable with doing it with their mouth, and especially if a mole is doing a bris milah for someone who did tshuva, and he doesn't know what this man's history is, whether this person has AIDS or what, just because a person has a long beard today, we don't know where he's been beforehand. So then the tradition has always been that mohel will do mitzitza not orally. So if you tell a mohel that your history is you grew up irreligious, and it's the right thing to tell the mohel, then the mohel will not do mitzitza b'peh, most mohalim. I mean, in general, that's the tradition that all, it doesn't matter Haredi or Datilmi or anything. Because we say, we don't know where the person's been. I mean, a person has a history. Just like if a person is doing a bris milah for someone who's not religious today, so then no mohel does mitzitza b'peh, because we don't know. The mohel is worried about his own life. But this is like something we don't publicize. I'm only telling it to you guys because when you guys show up to a bris, if I'm not the mohel, so then the mohel is going to see you with your beards, with your wives, with the kehillah you're part of. He won't know that maybe a person has a different history than the way he looks now. And it is important to let the mohel know, because for his safety, he should really not do mitzitza b'peh. But that's, again, that's up to you guys, but that's my recommendation. Let him know and let him decide what to do. Let's say a person had a bris that's problematic. Many people come to Machon and they say, my Brit Milah was done when I was 4 days old in the hospital. My Brit Milah was done by a non-Jew. My Brit Milah was done at night. So all these things are problematic. So what we do is, we do Hatafat Dam Brit. The Halacha says that in such a situation, what you can do is, you have to emit, for the sake of a bris milah, one drop of blood from the area of the top near the atara. Now, you guys should just know, this doesn't have to be painful. I've done it to many guys here at the Machon, and I've had people who I did it to, and after I did it, they said, no, when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? And I said, it's done. Pick up your pants. It's over. Go home. It doesn't have to be painful. I mean, the way we do it is we take a very, very sharp knife and we just touch it to the skin and after we touch it to the skin, because we take a surgeon's knife, so the person doesn't feel it, and he has a scratch on his skin. Remember, we need one drop. And that drop, and then we put a tissue, and usually it's such a soft scratch that, like, that you have to know where to do it. Again, don't do this at home. Don't try this at home. Yeah, you do have to know what you're doing. I mean, there have been people who did it to themselves and ended up in intensive care. I mean, they cut out an artery or something, and suddenly a vein, and now, you got to know what you're doing. But it is a very easy procedure. I keep knives here at the Machon, just because I know people are very nervous when people know they need to get this done. So people can sometimes keep it in their stomach for years, and then suddenly they say, I wish someone would do it to me already. And I say, okay, come to the house, we'll do it. And in a minute you'll be out and it's over. Really? Okay. So that's why I keep knives. I have a stack of knives here. Surgeon's knives. I clean my hands. And we do it, and it takes nothing. And then again, because it's such a light scratch, so... No. For a Jew, you don't need witnesses. By Giyu, you need three witnesses. You need a court. And we say that it's two witnesses and the Mohel himself. That's why we only have two. No, a Brit Milah, it's customary to have 10 people present at least, but it's not mandatory. You could do it alone. And a Brit Milah, it's customary to have a big feast. We celebrate the fact that we could have a Brit Milah. Yes, but that's not mandatory. What?
As a ger,
you have to have a Brit Milah in the presence of a Beit Din. A ger who's circumcised in a hospital is not qualified. It has to be done for the sake of Jewishness and in front of a Beit Din that's approving the person becoming a ger. And a ger also, very often people come to do ger and they've been circumcised already, so then they have to do this procedure in front of a Beit Din. And this procedure, again, is very easy. Now, I know the second someone talks to you about putting a knife in that area, it's like, right, it's easy. But I'm telling you, I asked this guy, I have to remember who he was, I think he's still here, I asked him if I could send other people to ask him. I don't remember who it was. There were a few. I mean, you could ask. I just would ask them if anyone's contemplating it. So I just would want to get the okay of the people to tell you. But I've done it to a few people here, and it's a very light and easy procedure. People get more excited than it's worth. I had a guy faint on me once because he was excited. Like, he just, are you doing it yet? No, not yet. Okay, give me 1 second. I'll do it. 1 second. The guy's out. Before I could do anything. I mean, the guy fainted. It had nothing. Again, the pain is nothing. The nervousness, I understand.
What is the pain? What he's down to do? What is the function?
I think so. Because he wanted me to do it. I think so. I wouldn't do that to a person. No. I couldn't do that. No, the truth is he fainted like 2 seconds afterwards. We did it, and he said, when are you going to do it? And I said, it's done. He said, yeah. And then he started, I saw him like, shoop. It had nothing to do. He like, no, I caught him. I held him. He came to like after 2 or 3 seconds. I couldn't believe it. Like he didn't, it wasn't the feeling. He was asking me, when are you going to do it? I said, it's done. Okay. Okay, what other issues do we have by a bris? There's the honor of bringing the child in. We usually give that to a couple that doesn't have any children. That's called being the kvater. That's the Yiddish word, the one who carries it in. The mother of the baby gives the baby over to a woman, and she gives it over to her husband, who gives it over to the father of the baby. And being that intermediary that brings in the baby is a segula for having children. That's so people usually give it to a young couple or an old couple who hasn't yet had children, and they're the intermediaries. That's the kvater. The other honor is putting the baby on the chair where Elio is going to come, and that's called kisei shel Elio. We put the child there and we ask Elio to help and assist us in the bris. Elio is the one that was the prophet who lamented the fact that the Jews stopped circumcising in his days, in the days of Ahab. And God told him, you're all the time complaining about the Jews. From now on, you're going to show up every time they do a bris and testify to me that they performed the bris. And so we have a tradition that Elio is the angel of the bris. He always shows up to every bris. And he's there, so to speak, at the mole's right side. When we perform the bris, so there's the sandak, the one who holds the babies. Our sages said that bringing a child to the bris milah is like bringing a sacrifice before Hashem. And so the one who holds the baby at the time of the bris milah is like he himself is the altar. And that's why it's a big honor. The biggest honor is to be the tzaddik, the one who holds the child. Avram's name was changed when he had his circumcision, and from here we have the custom that we only name a child when he gets a circumcision. So even though my baby in the hospital is now over a month old, he doesn't have a name yet. We call him Tzaddiko, he's our Tzaddik. And we call, when we pray about him, we pray about him as Racha Nola, the young child, the son of Shendel. But he doesn't have a name yet because he'll have his name when he gets his circumcision. And this is from our parsha. This custom evolves from the fact that Avram had his name changed to Avraham at the time of his circumcision. The next honor is after the circumcision, the one who holds the baby and the one who reads out the brachos, in which we pray for the baby's well-being and we give the child a name. If a child is a mamzer, a bastard, so we don't pray for his well-being. We just give him a name. If a child came from a woman who didn't get a proper get from her husband and got remarried, so the child is a mamzer. So we don't want the continuation of mamzer. And we don't wish him, you have many, many children just like you. We don't say that. We're just... So that's what the Navi said. That's what King Shlomo said. Dimata ashukim v'enehem minachem. There are those that tear in this world, and who can comfort them? They were wrong, an injustice was done to them, and we can't help them. That's life. If a person has his hand cut off, we can't help him. If a person is born and he's crippled, we can't help him. There are people in the world that did nothing wrong that we can see, and yet they live in the world in a fashion which is constricting, which is limited. They're handicapped. So this person has a spiritual handicap. He's a mamzer. We can't help him. Just like a person that's born without feet. We can't help him. That's the world. This person is born with a spiritual handicap. He's a mamzer. It's not his fault. He can still be a great person. He could be a huge Talmud Chacham. He could lead the Jewish people. But he's still a mamzer. When we name a child, so ancient generations had Ruach HaKodesh. They'd name the child based upon what was going on in the world. And our generations, the Tanam already say in the Medrash, they name after the grandparents and the great-grandparents. You name after someone who the baby came from as a sign of thank you. You don't have to name him after a great uncle, but you should name him after a grandparent or a great grandparent, etc. All these modern new names, they're new names. You never know how it'll affect the child. We say in Judaism that the name affects a person. When a person has a name, that affects who he is. It's in the Gemara. The Gemara says that a name affects who we are. It's a Gemara in Brachas and other places. So I don't think it's a good idea to choose one of these newfangled names. If you don't want a name after a grandparent or a great-grandparent, so at least use a more classical name. That's more recommended. I think that's it for a quick overview of Brit Milah.
One last question.
Yeah?
On a child that's born and premature, the time of the Brit Milah, how is it?
So if a child is ill, this is something you guys do have to know. You do not perform a circumcision on a child who is ill, a serious illness. And a serious illness is defined in halacha. A serious illness could even be an eye infection. In halacha, we take things more seriously than medicine. When a child is ill, so we say that he may not have a circumcision. An adult as well. And also for adults. And when a child is ill, so if it's a serious illness, we say you have to wait 7 24-hour periods before you can perform a circumcision. Sometimes when a child is born, he has to be in an incubator. So I once had a case where I didn't want to do the Brit Milah. The baby was too small. I said, I'm not comfortable doing this Brit. You want? Someone else is willing to do it? I don't believe in doing it. The doctor said you could do it, and I said, I'm not willing to do it. So the guy went to another moel, but he kept calling me up to get tips. So one of the things he called me up, I said, wait a second, the kid was in an incubator for 2 hours after he was born, right? There was some time when he was in distress. Make sure to tell the Moel about that story, because and that's what the Moel agreed with me, halachically, being that he had those 2 hours when he was in distress, you cannot perform the Brit Milah in the morning of the 8th day. You have to wait till you have 7 24-hour periods from the minute he was out of distress. From the minute he came to, it was 100%. From then you have to wait 7 24-hour periods. Ordinarily we say you could perform it any time during the 8th day. But once the child had a situation where he was in distress, so we say, once he was in distress, we say, you count 7 24-hour periods from the time he was whole. This is something you'll have to consult with your doctor, your mohel, and you have to just let them all know what happened at delivery. When a child is ill, so my baby is now going to be 32, 33 days old. Let's say he gets released from the hospital tomorrow. So I asked the doctors, when's the first day I could perform a circumcision? So they told me it's going to be 3-4 days after he's released. So from that point on, according to some opinions, we count 7 days. According to other opinions, we say no. Those 4 days are just a waiting period. We want to make sure he's okay. So really, he's okay the day they release him. And we count the 7 days from the day they release him. Those are different opinions. Again, you'll ask your moel or your rabbi.
Technically, the son, let's say, somebody who's premature, the king who's premature, but let's say, goes out of what time? Is it possibility that
we go
a few weeks in the start of the 8th month, let's say, could it be that before then, the completion of the 9th month, he could have the briefing left?
For sure. For sure. We go by when he's ready for it. It depends on weight. It depends on how yellow he is. It depends on his health. If he's ready for it, then that's what decides.
Can I ask a question from the Tanakh? I read about 1 month before, so I don't remember exactly. About the Yeshua, the first book of Tanakh, Ktuvim.
Nevi'im,
yeah. And it's written there that he circumcised all Levim in 1 day. So how it could be? If count, it is he should make one circumcision for 2 seconds like this.
Why? You could do a circumcision in a few seconds. How long does it take? What's the problem? You have people lying down. You pick it up, cut. Pick it up, cut. Yep.
How it could work?
I'm telling you that I could do Brit Milah in seconds. It's not necessary. I mean, maybe he had other people doing the bandaging. How long does it take to do Brit Milah? I mean, today we do it more complicated. We separate the underskin before the Brit Milah. That takes a few seconds. And then we lift it, and we put them again, and then we make a blessing, and then we do the cut. Once upon a time, you lifted it, made the blessing, you cut. I mean, and then you bandaged, so maybe someone else did the bandaging. And maybe he had a lot of people helping him. Who said he did it all himself? But it says in them, they had a mountain of foreskins, right? Givat HaHalot. That was Yeshua's time. Any other questions? Today they know that it's very, very healthy to be circumcised. They're using it as preventative medicine in Africa for AIDS. They have a shortage of mohalim for those who want to go do blutot down in Africa for people with AIDS. Ordinarily, mohalim don't use gloves. If you go to more pishposh places, they will use gloves. I don't see why not use gloves, but you don't have to use gloves. We clean our hands very, very well, hopefully, and the utensils are all not only cleaned, but also brought to hundreds of degrees, just like your doctor's utensils. If you don't have an autoclave, so you use a pressure cooker with steam, we bring it up to the same heat. Yeah, that's why we do it.
20 degrees, it's okay.
Yeah, so that's what we do.
If one person, genetically pure Jew, he was born by a Jewish woman, but he is not circumcised, is he galachically Jew or not Jew? How he is considered by Galacha?
The Halacha is that even if a person did not have a circumcision, if he's born Jewish, he is Jewish. But he has an obligation to circumcise himself. He's responsible to circumcise himself, but the fact that a person has not yet circumcised himself does not remove anything about his being Jewish. He was born Jewish. He is Jewish. He has an obligation, just like we have an obligation to shake lulav, and we have an obligation to put on tefillin every morning. This person has an obligation to get his circumcision taken care of.
But before circumcision, can he read Torah? No.
Yeah, everything. He's Jewish.
Was called to Torah? Okay?
Yeah, he's Jewish. If a person says, I don't care about this, this is a mitzvah, it doesn't interest me, I have nothing to do with it, then it's like any mitzvah person says it about. So we say, this person is a kofar, he's not accepting all of the Torah. So then that's a problem. He's Jewish, but he's a Jew who's not accepting all of the Torah, so then we have an issue with him. But the fact that a person has not technically yet had a circumcision, we had a guy here who came to the machon, came to me and said, can you do atafat dambrit? Said, yeah, no problem. I said, really? I said, yeah, what's the problem? So he said, well, I've been looking for 2 years for someone to do this for me. 2 years I've been calling. He lived out in the Midwest. I've been calling everywhere to find someone, and everyone says, yeah, maybe I have to look at you. Maybe it's complicated. Maybe this, maybe that. I don't know. People gave him all kinds of excuses. But this is a Jew who never had a kosher circumcision and spent 2 years searching. Was he any less Jewish during those 2 years? No. He was Jewish. He just didn't get it done yet.
Yeah, there are a lot of Jews in Ukraine and in Russia who are not circumcised.
So with adults, we do it with stitches, and we do it with putting the area to sleep. We do local anesthesia, hopefully, if the adult is agreeing.
What?
Yeah, okay. So we're going to call it a night.